Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's December 15th, 2015. What a great show we have lined up tonight. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. And we've got some special guests, including Hutch from the new Culinary Institute of America, Brooklyn Brewery Outposts in Hyde Park, New York. Jesse and Laura from soon-to-be Interboro Spirits and Ales, which will be coming to you right here in Brooklyn. And, of course, we're happy to welcome our winter host, co-host Ann Passera.
Hello. Right.
Also known as Ann Likes Beer. So, Ann, you know, I didn't understand this. You got kicked off Facebook. How did that happen?
Yeah, apparently they don't think Likes Beer is my real name.
So, Annie Likes Beer is how I know you.
I know, and that's the thing. You know, I think they're trying to get as much personal info on there as they possibly can. What are you going to do? Hopefully soon they'll ease up a little bit.
Well, since you're not on Facebook, you can follow us at @beer_sessions on Twitter. And what's your Twitter? It's Ann Likes Beer, right?
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, all that jazz.
And Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, suppliers of world-class ales and lagers. All right. So, Hutch, we'll start with you, man.
Sure.
We knew you from brewing at Crossroads up in Athens, New York. Love so many of your beers, especially the Outrage IPA. And tell us how you got involved with the Culinary Institute of America and Brooklyn Brewery. What do they do? They set up a brewing program?
Yeah, basically.
And Ann, you were up there too, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, this goes back a couple of years, where Brooklyn, you know, Garrett Oliver, very food forward and very at the cutting edge of pairing beer and food. So he's been working with the Culinary Institute for a long time, kind of developed the partnership. Culinary has a beverage specialty that the bachelor students can take that goes into mixology and wine, and they have a campus in Napa Valley, so they really wanted to round out their beer program. So this is like 3-4 years in the making, and the brewery just opened up in October. So we have a brewery on campus in the student commons, right in the student center. We have a class called The Art and Science of Brewing the students can take, and they have classroom, basically lecture with one of the professors, and then I serve as the lab. So they go into class 2 days a week.
And what can the students buy? Growlers on campus?
Yep, get growlers on
That's
campus,
amazing.
Beers on tap.
Right?
Yeah,
love that.
They can help me make the beer that they then can get their friends to buy. So,
and what was it like? You were up there for a visit the other day.
I don't think I can say enough. I am trying to figure out how to live there, work there, eat there, sleep there. It's just fantastic. You know, I think that it's a natural progression for chefs and for future restaurant management, anyone in the industry really, to have an understanding of beer and really well-made beer, handcrafted, how it goes with food, how it is food. You know, one of the things that I fell in love with as well, they have a Groot garden and they have all these herbs and different spices that they're going to be able to play with, and just to go out and kind of pick your own ingredients for the beer. I was having a lot of envy there when I saw it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
So what's the curriculum like in terms of making beer?
As far as for the students?
Does every student get to make beer?
You have to take this class. The class is only open to the bachelor's level students. Most of them are seniors. So actually, they had their final today. Most of them graduate on Thursday. Basically, they have, you know, they go through all the raw ingredients. It's really focused more on brewing than it is about beer appreciation. So there is some tasting that goes on, but it's more about the process. You know, a lot of these students are going to be in management. They're going to be in hospitality. They're going to be either front or back of the house. A lot of them are going to go into R&D. There were some guys there talking to Dogfish Head came to our most recent career fair, and one of the students was talking to them about logistics. She has a Navy background, like shipping stuff. And so she wants to go into like managing how beer is shipped around the world for craft beer brewing companies. So they learn about, like I said, raw ingredients. They learn about...
I always forget all the jobs that there are in this industry.
There's a lot of them that we need that don't exist yet. And I think a lot of these students are going to end up being in those positions. Because they bring a really cool, they have, you know, this whole other education that doesn't really exist in our industry. You know, most of us are brewers, and maybe you move up the ladder, maybe you start your own business, maybe you, you know, get more into the management, but you're still came to it from the actual, I'm the guy who makes beer side, not the, you know, I know how to run a multi-million dollar facility side.
So what are some jobs that we need or we don't have in brewing.
I think as you see craft brewing exploding and you see like things scaling up, right? You know, it's not how many, I mean, think about the people you know who are starting breweries who may very well not end up being the brewer anymore. You know, they go into the ownership side and they go into management side. And then as you expand, you know, you've got the wholesalers are exploding too, right? They're all, you got all these new little wholesalers coming up who want to represent craft beer. You've got kind of a wave of improved legislation. So there's a political side to things. And then, you know, obviously for me, I'm seeing things from the culinary perspective. So I think that, I think when I say that there's jobs that don't exist yet, it's because we don't know what they are yet.
Yeah.
But they're going to be there.
And Ann, what would your ideal beer job be?
You're starting
over.
So
you went back to school. You're not doing it already?
I know. Yeah. I kind of have. I mean, no, the thing is, what I love about this is, again, being able to wear many hats and do different things. You know, today I did all the ordering for a bar. You know, tomorrow I might be doing, like today I'm doing a radio show, you know, then I'm teaching a class, judging a beer competition. I mean, there's so many things that kind of go into it, writing an article. You know, it's every day is different and every day is exciting and there's always something new. And again, partnering with bringing the food element into it, I'm happy.
So you ordered beer today for what? Taproom 307?
For Taproom 307.
What are some beers that you ordered? Draft beers?
Well, we have several party. This is party season. So I, my goodness, probably about 40 kegs today. I'm a little overwhelmed. I can't even remember off the top of my head, but get back to me.
Stuff.
A lot
of talking about
stuff.
Career. So we got Laura and Jesse. I was thinking it was Jesse from Carton because you helped open up Carton, Jesse Ferguson.
Yeah,
and now you're kind of Jesse at Other Half.
Yep.
Working there.
Jesse at Other Half and Jesse at Carton, two of my pseudonyms. And Laura and I are starting Innerborough. So then I'll be Innerborough Jesse.
Like spring 2016.
Yeah, 2016 for sure.
And Laura, how did you, because we know Jesse as a brewer for many years, but you're like some kind of like management person. So we're getting like sophisticated,
it's
management
true.
Sophisticated
it's
people getting into the brewing industry.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as sophisticated. It's just more about, you know, the interest on the business side, as Justin was talking about. There are lots of different jobs that go into making a successful brewery and distillery, as we're going to do. You know, you do need to know about logistics. You do need to understand all the personnel aspects, all of the different pieces that come into getting that great product that Jesse's going to produce out to everybody. So, you know, my hope is that I can bring some skill to that side that will free Jesse up to do what he does best.
And when you guys open up, we're not going to talk about jobs all night, but you started at Soft Hutch.
Yeah.
When you open up, what are some of the positions you're going to hire besides, you know, brewers and people in the brewery?
You know, primarily, we're going to take advantage of self-distribution in New York City and New York State. So sales is obviously the very first thing that we're going to focus on, and getting somebody who can, you know, represent our brand and take it out to all the accounts. And then, you know, what as Hutch mentioned, the changing legislative landscape is making it really easy for breweries to sell product direct to consumers on site. So having hospitality and on site and food is, you know, gonna allow us to hopefully underwrite a business that will grow and thrive for a number of years.
But what you're doing at CIA is different, really. It's really a department of educational.
Yeah, education comes first, for sure. You know, they're really trying to round out the culinary students' experience, give them the tools to kind of, as they go out into the culinary world, you know, think of beer and appreciate beer as on the level they do wine, to make it that much to the point where, you know, we get to stop having that conversation about talking about how great beer is with food. Like, we all know beer is great with food. It's really forgiving. I hope that really soon we just stop even having to mention it, you know, because people know already. But yeah, it's really about the education. So we're really focused more on obviously making beer for the students, making beer for the five restaurants on the CIA campus, but then getting people in there. And we're really just kind of scratching the tip of that.
And I know you're teaching, but you're probably learning a lot, right, working with chefs. And I know you'd mentioned something about the vocabulary and
yeah,
sort of what they their take on it versus a brewer's. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's been really cool. I get to go sit in the class a lot. And, you know, they do a lot of tastings, which is cool because Professor Miller, goes and buys lots of really expensive beers at halftime. And that, you know, I don't want to spend money on. And then we sit there and try them. And I get to listen to the students talk about tasting beer, and they really come at it from a culinary perspective, where they've been tasting different food products the whole time they've been there. I mean, they have a class where they're sitting down and, okay, here's 8 squashes. Let's try these 8 squashes and talk about them. So they're used to describing flavors, and they come at it from a totally different vocabulary than brewers do. You know, we talk about hoppy and piney and caddy and those things, and they're talking about, you know, bean paste and umami and, you know, Werther's Originals candies and things like that, like descriptive terms that are accurate and, like, really strike a chord with me, but that I never would have used that word. So I've been learning as much from them as they're, you know, as they're learning from me.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you're a brewer bring, and when you talk about staff and education, a lot of what you're doing is educating your community and your staff about how to talk about beer with each other. And, you know, it's fun to taste beer with people who are new to tasting it and can describe flavors that, you know, come, you know, I never would have thought of that. Mm-hmm. But then suddenly it becomes part of your tasting vocabulary. And, you know, I think that, It's an experience, and it's a fun thing to share.
Let's taste this beer that we have. So this is an IPA.
Sure,
that was made at
the Culinary
Institute.
Yep, this is Cleaver. It's one of our two flagship beers.
Now, who makes this beer?
Well, I brewed this one.
You brewed it.
Yeah. So we just got started. This is actually, this was our fourth batch of beer, our second batch of IPA. American IPA, 6.7%, a lot of Mosaic, some Centennial, a lot of Centennial. Amarillo and Little Simcoe.
So, Jesse, what words would you use to describe the taste? Not Werther's, but...
No, there's definitely no Werther's in this.
No. No caramel.
I'm getting a lot of tropical fruit and tangy sort of citrus flavors.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Ann? Just the first... since we're talking about students tasting beer.
Yeah, absolutely. The same, the tropical white fruit, like the flesh of the fruit. Not spice is the wrong word, but it's very juicy. You know, I could drink this all day.
What about you, Laura, since you're not a brewer?
You know, there are so many different flavors going on at once, which is great. I love the... I feel like I can taste a variety of the hops going on all at once, which is
great. I would say, wow, it kind of tastes like your Outrage IPA from Crossroads, but not quite.
I was very purposeful not to use the same hops. And it's actually very different beer, but... It's very hop forward, which Outrage was, and I'm very proud of that beer as well.
So it sounds like we should all go to CIA and take a class.
Please do.
It sounds like they must have a lot of fun tasting your beers.
They do, and they have a lot of fun getting their hands dirty, and I haven't had to rake out a mash yet, which is great. And,
they do all that?
They do everything.
Oh, wow.
They've learned the joy of cleaning kegs, which is fantastic.
Well, talking about, I'm making fun of you, Hutch, but you know you're a teacher now as much
sure.
as a brewer.
Yeah.
And you came in, you look like a teacher, you got a clean shirt.
Well, he was
there's
a teacher.
But there's Jesse here, who's still working at other half. What since 4 this morning? He's rubbing his eyes. Yeah. He looks tired. His scruffy face and a t-shirt on. So you know,
yeah, I'm looking forward to a day tomorrow of racking beer into 300-liter barrels and then cleaning while I clean kegs. So you know, sort of multitasking.
I understand. Yeah.
It's fun, though.
Maybe you can get some interns.
I know. Other half, you know, it's a lot of fun working over there. It's a big family of friends, and we all share responsibilities and workload pretty well. So I alternate between... I was on the brew house today for 2 brews, and then tomorrow I'll be, you know, racking barrels and flipping kegs. And
it's a lot of hard work, you know?
Yeah, it is.
It also helps when you get to make a great product and you get to work for somebody who is doing very well.
Yeah,
you know,
and people who have a vision based on quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's very fulfilling work.
No, it sure is, man. I had a other half forever ever IPA here at Roberta's on the way in.
I brewed 2 batches of that today.
I can tell.
I have a keg of tap room coming in this week.
Hey, quick shout out. Don't forget, it's the end of the year. It's heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. And if you're a business that's listening, you're a bar, a restaurant, or a brewery, check it out. There's business memberships and sponsorships available, and it's got a great reach. People listening from Sweden to Michigan to Florida. We know because they come to visit us in New York City. So, hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a great show here. We got Hutch from the Culinary Institute of America, Brooklyn Brewery, Brewing and School Program.
Yep.
You got to go to school and brew beer.
That's right.
So we're tasting some of your beers. We're moving on to a stout. So what's it? What are the? You said something about the class, people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't even talk right now.
So every
beers are so good. It's had the IPA. I'm loving it.
Every class of students gets a chance to help kind of inspire and create a beer that will go on tap. So we talk about recipe development in class, but we also talk about saleability and seasonability. So because we have an IPA and a wit on tap, you know, I talk to them a lot about, all right, we're going to brew a third beer. What do you guys want to brew? What's going to stand out? What's going to sell? Like, sure, we could use some really cool ingredients, but is this something that's going to sell in this setting? So we decided to brew a stout, and then we talked a little bit about, okay, what do you want to put in it? What kind of flavors are you looking to get out of the stout? So we decided to do an oatmeal stout. With a lot of espresso-y, chocolatey character. Wanted to keep it full-bodied, but not heavy. So the oats definitely help with that. And so we called it Cast Iron Stout. So, you know, a lot of our beers are going to have culinary names. The students got to name this one. And I'm really happy with it. I'm really happy with how it came out.
I'll tell you, for the number of people that are opening their own breweries, and like Jesse and Laura, you guys are opening Indaboro soon, it's also interesting to see that people, as they're kind of growing up in the industry, many of these higher Cicerone level people, brewers like yourself, Hutch, getting into different jobs. Did you ever think that you'd be teaching brewing at a major educational institution?
I have thought about it in the past, because I actually taught middle school before I became a brewer. So I've always liked teaching. I didn't particularly like middle schoolers.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, nobody likes
seventh graders. Are more fun.
Even and now he can hang out with his students and drink beer.
Nobody likes seventh graders. So I got into beer after that, but I always have enjoyed like training people and talking about beer and like getting people passionate about it. So when the job came available, it was sort of like a no-brainer to go after it.
You loved going up there, didn't you, Ann?
Oh, my God, it's fantastic. This was funny because we had a lunch and paired, you know, all these beers with different courses. And one thing that really stood out, I mean, all the desserts were delicious, but they did oatmeal cookies with spent grain. And it was one of the best expressions of spent grain. It was just like taking a bite of a brewery and in the best way possible. Like that je ne sais quoi that you get when you walk into a brewery, the smell of the grain. And that paired with this beer was just perfect. It's delicious.
One thing in the restaurant business, I always like the CIA grads because they really learn everything. They start with the proper techniques for even washing dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they're really helpful cleaning up. And
I'm enjoying it.
Taking the spent grain and making cookies. And
yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Feeding him grapes.
No. Well, let's not go that far, but you know. It's a lot of fun so far.
Hey, Hutch, how much beer do they brew, or how much beer do you brew?
Not a whole lot. We have a 7-barrel facility. 3 fermenters, 1 bright. So our max will be probably 500 barrels a year, but I don't think we'll hit that. I think it's going to be down around, because we only sell on campus to our own restaurants, I think it's going to be like 250, 300, depending on how thirsty the students are.
I was going to say, well, until the growlers really start taking off and the parties
we'll get the
and things like that.
Yeah. And the public can come in and drink beer also and buy growlers to go. And then we have graduations, things like that. But there also are about 4 to 5 weeks of the year where the school is 100% closed. So that's, you know, whatever 1 month out of the year would be that you basically can't do any business, which is fine. We're going to throw some lagers in the tank and let them sit there. We got a month to let them sit on. So
and let's taste the stout that you
yeah,
made.
Absolutely. I'm really happy with how it came out. You know, this was our batch. I think this was batch number 5. So I actually was mostly happy that it was a successful brew day and the mash didn't get stuck too badly. And I was able to actually make a batch of beer at that point. But then the flavors came out all right, too. So
is this an American stout?
Oatmeal stout.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 5.8.
The kick of smoke. It's great, too. It's not that heavy.
Right.
I mean, you get so much flavor, especially for today, wearing a t-shirt in December. But, you know, you kind of want those rich, full flavors, and it's still relatively light-bodied, effervescent, bubbly.
I'll tell you, if I went to any of the restaurants at CIA and had your IPA or their stout, I'd be very happy.
Yeah,
you know,
so.
And you know, I'm going to pull up an article that I read yesterday. There's an Englishman, Pete Brown. Some of you, do you know him, Jesse?
Yeah, they're right.
Pete Baum, he writes a blog and he talks about a lot of things. His article yesterday was about how craft beer is kind of like expanding, and is there even a necessity to use the term craft beer? And you should check it out, Pete Brown's blog. If you haven't read it, we won't talk about it. But what it's making me think about is just how great it is to have a really good, straightforward stout and IPA. And I think what he was saying is that just because it's craft or just because they're small producers doesn't mean the beer is good. But I'm going to take exception to that. I think that of the brewers that we know and the work they've put in, I think that in New York City, all the new small breweries are great. I feel like it's a heyday in New York. So I don't know. You've went from Carton to other half, and now you guys are talking about Interborough. You know, do you feel like there's room for another small brewery in New York City?
Yeah, I think you know, luckily New York City is a very thirsty market, and you know, with the amount of education of the consumers that's happening with, and the quality of the beers that are out there, and you know, there's so many good accounts now that are specializing in beer and providing really good curation in terms of their taps and their turning over their taps. And you know, I've come back to the education side in terms of being a brewer and working with consumers and accounts in terms of talking about, you know, quality, freshness, and, you know, the flavors. And so that people start to learn that, you know, it's not about how rare things are. It's not about how hard things are to get. It's about, to me, as a brewer, it's about drinkability, and which is a word that gets thrown around a lot. But I think that it really defines what I like. You know, it defines, like, this stout is very, you know, it's got a really light body, and it makes it something that you get a session and you could sit and have a pint or two with some friends. And I love it when you get to go to an account or a bar and have, you know, multiple offerings like this that you can.
Hey, I'll have a refill. Come on.
Yeah, well, I was exactly. going to say, too, not to like keep saying this, but, you know, to bring up that point. But it's like there's so much in the market right now. It's flooded. My email's insane every single day. And what's been standing out to me lately has been the really solid, like, well-made beers, not necessarily the craziest. And to go back to Crossroads, I mean, we did a Crossroads event at Blind Tiger, and there was, you know, I'm very lucky we get to chase everything that kind of comes into the city, every possible weird ingredient you could think of. And they have a stout that Hutch made, the Black Rock Stout, that to me stood out like just, I couldn't believe how much it stood out, and it wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't barrel-aged, imperial, this, no weird ingredients. It was just a solid, well-made stout, and I wouldn't shut up about it. And I was so, like, impressed by it. And I think, what did you guys win, GAB? What, you took home, like, all the medals or something?
World Beer Cup and GABF, yeah.
Yeah, World Beer Cup and GABF, and it's, like, it's nice when people recognize, like, it doesn't have to be, you know, the craziest thing under the sun to be really delicious.
I mean, that's sort of, like, also personal style, too, right? I mean, getting back to your original point, I was going to say, just on this aside, as an upstate guy, I've been in upstate New York for the last 12 years brewing. I've been super impressed by all the new breweries here in the city. I honestly never thought we'd see New York come this far as a beer city. I thought it was financially too hard to have a production facility, you know, that was anywhere really close to a good part of the city. And I'm obviously very wrong about that, which is great. But I've been super impressed by Other Half and Threes and a lot of the other places
yeah.
that are doing grim, that are doing amazing beers.
And I'm not knocking the craze. Don't get me wrong. I love that as well. I just think that, you know, there's a place for everything. And I think
I want to just bring that in because Pete Brown's a great writer. And I think he was trying to say that don't discount what a large brewery can make. And even saying, you know, Guinness is making good beers. And that's all fine. I don't just want to talk about the really big breweries. But I just wanted to say that I think that in New York City, all the new breweries are doing good. And I think because everyone's coming in with skills and there's money and there's good equipment. And it's not like 20 years ago where they were all using the same kind of outdated English system. With, sure. What was the yeast? The Ringwald yeast?
Ringwald.
People still think
the Molly
is bad.
Ringwald yeast.
But there's a lot of passion. And I think that's what drives, I trust brewers who love beer and who love to drink beer. And I think that, you know, for the most part, if you're making what you want to drink and what you love, then there's a good chance, as long as you've got the background in the use of the technical side, you know, Transmitter, you know, they're making tiny batches of beer, but they make really good beer. And, you know.
Yeah. So now you guys have a chance. So you and Laura, you have the chance to kind of like pretty much create something that's with all your experience and everything that you feel like is right in the world. And we'll forget the distilling part, but what is that brewery going to be, Jesse?
You know, it's going to be, we're going to make 30 barrels of beer at a time, and we're going to make beer that is, you know, essentially, I'm doing my best not to pigeonhole myself. I think it's a big mistake when brewers open up.
No, but just what, tell us some of the ideas you have that inspired you.
Oh, well, you know? I mean, I like session beers. I like hops. I like mixed fermentations. I like barrel-aged projects that range from, mixed fermentation in wood with bacteria like Pediococcus or Lactobacillus. I like sours. I really like unfiltered lagers. One of my favorite beers that I made at Carton was the Carton of Milk Session Milk Stout, 4% alcohol.
I just got that today, Jimmy's number 43.
Yeah. I mean, I love when I find that beer on draft in New York. And it's a beer that gets sent to New York from New Jersey, which is great. And, you know, I love boat beer, and I love double IPAs. My goal is to create a portfolio of flavors that's wide enough that there's something for anybody who really enjoys beer. And I think that's a lot of people.
And what brought you to Jesse? How did you guys meet?
We met through a mutual connection, actually a relative of Jesse's wife's. It was just kind of one of those moments where this friend of mine said, "You really have to meet Jesse." And I said, "Well, okay, that sounds good. Why don't we get together?" And it was, we kept meeting and talking about what we were both interested in doing, and really came together with the idea of Interborough over, I guess it was probably 6 or 8 months working together on it. So,
and what do you think of Jesse as a brewer? You can tell us honestly.
Like Johnny LaRue.
I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't believe in him wholeheartedly.
But we love him too, man. I'll tell you, when Carton Boat came out, that just blew me away. I think for 2 years I had it on the line nonstop.
Yeah, we always knew we could get Boat at Jimmy's when we were in the city.
But still, you know, we're impressed by your skills. And if you don't mind asking, what's your role at Other Half now? Because I know they're expanding, but you're working there.
I'm by definition, a shift brewer. So, I mean, I show up and brew sans recipes as best I can and to the T. Sam has a real clear vision. Sam and Matt put the Other Half together and have had just phenomenal success. And it's based on, you know, just really exploiting hops to the, like, you know, it's unbelievable. I think at the first week I was there, we brewed 5 different IPAs. And, you know, I think at Carton the entire time we probably brewed, you know, 7 in 4 years. So it's a great time. I really enjoy it. And like I said, I'm working with a great group of guys. And, I love it. It's fun. I would only be leaving to do my own thing.
And if you were going to be part of a brewery that was opening in New York City, what would be one key thing that you would have?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Say an element of the brewery that you think would be really important.
Humility. I don't know what to say. I mean, really.
That's the best answer I've ever heard.
It's a lot of competition, and you got to really be in it for the right reasons and, you know, be dedicated and not care just about the bottom line. And it's a long road, and there's a lot of things that are going to happen, and you have to love it. And you have to be cool. I mean, it's a community.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
You know, I read a quote today. It was a dumb quote from Edible Manhattan, but I thought it'd be good for the show. It just said, when you're brewing, you have a fair amount of downtime, so picking your brew buddies, you have to pick your brew buddies wisely. So,
that's,
I don't know.
A great quote, I think.
What does that mean? Is that something you have to go through? Do you guys brew by yourselves? Or
I spend a lot of time in the morning brewing by myself, listening to my buddies Charlie Mingus and Miles Davis, and then around 9 or 10 when the distribution guys show up, and then I got good buddies to change it to a Fetty Wap and
sweet.
And you know, whatever hardcore gangster rap we could think of for the day. I think it's a lifestyle, and it is about being with good people, and it's about finding people who you want to spend time with, because it's a long day and it's a lot of work, and you're counting on people, and it's any job, right? But you're counting on people to pull their weight and do their job.
What about you, Hutch, when you're brewing?
I think it probably means get a dog. You know? Have somebody there
to
keep you company.
Brewery dog.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
I mean, Jesse's right. Like, you spent, you know, in the production breweries, you spent a lot of early mornings by yourself, you know, listening to the tunes. So for me, I have a whole classroom of students. So
yeah, and they grain out for you.
They grain out for me, and they clean the kegs. It's fantastic.
But at the same time, you know, picking the people you're around all the time.
Sure.
What is it, the airport test? You know, if you are sitting stuck in an airport and you meet somebody, do you want to sit there and talk with them while you're waiting for your plane, or do you want to go look back on your
You want to be with your dog.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind having a dog here, too.
All right.
Dogs are always welcome.
Hey, this is cool, man. We're having a great time, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Diamond.
And I'm Claudia Wu.
And we're the founders of Radio Cherry Bomb, which airs every Thursday at 1 o'clock on the Heritage Radio Network.
We're nothing without our listeners, literally.
Heritage Radio Network is a not-for-profit organization, and we rely on listener support.
So, when you have a minute, go check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart.
It's literally a beating heart. Give what you can. We appreciate every dime.
We love bringing you conversations with the coolest women in food, so help us continue to do that.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for donating.
You're the bomb.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. That was Cherry Bomb, Radio Cherry Bomb, ladies. So they're cool. They say it. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and, you know, click the Cherry Bomb, whatever it is. But we need you, and we're closing out the year. We have a new website and a lot of cool things. So Ann likes beer. I'm calling you Ann Likes Beer because
that's cool.
How I know you.
Works.
Even though Facebook won't let you use it.
Unbelievable.
So you brought us a beer from what? Taproom 307?
I did. It's undrafted Taproom 307. It's actually all the way from Italy. I felt sticking with the theme of sort of the culinary, you know, background and the pairings and things like that. I think one of the most exciting scenes is coming out of Italy. I think, you know, the pairing aspect is never a second, like an afterthought. I think a lot of the brewers go in thinking, how is this going to work on the table? How is this going to work with beer? This is from Del Borgo, Birra Del Borgo.
Del Borgo,
and it's called the Duquesa. And it's a Saison, and it's brewed with local Faro.
Birra Del Borgo, Duquesa.
Nailed it. But yeah, they do it with Faro, and I think, again, when we're talking about the gardens at CIA and the idea of going out and actually giving beer a sense of place, which, you know, since you can get everything from anywhere, you can ship your hops, you can treat your water, giving beer a sense of place is really something cool that doesn't happen all that often anymore. And I think the Italians are doing it really, really well with their local chestnuts and grape must and different things. And I just think this is great. And I had this in a place in Florence with lunch, like a pesto gnocchi, and they happened to have this one beer. It was the only artisanal beer they had, the only thing they had, and it was like heaven. So good.
Del Borgo. Like it.
Yeah. You like it?
I always love Del Borgo, you know? We've had them on a few times. So that's a beautiful story, Ann. And, you know, we got Hudson Valley sense of place, Hutch working up at CIA, and you going to Italy. And what? Tell us more about Interbro. My first question is, besides sense of place, is how do you get to have a brewery and distillery in the same – is it the same facility? Is that kind of a new law, or are you guys just, like, really
it
smart?
Is. Yeah. No, it's not new. The thing is that you know, for the, all the licensing, it's really about, you know, literally protecting the revenue. They're interested in the taxation as much as anything else. And so, you know, as far as doing both brewing and distilling, it's, as we know, it's a lot of the same ingredients and a lot of the same processes, you know, when it's something definitely that we'll talk about on the education side, about talking to people about the fact that, you know, as you're making whiskeys and different spirits, you're really starting with those same ingredients of grain, yeast, and water, right? But, you know, as far as being able to do it in the same place, it's really, you know, in talking with the folks in the federal government and the state government that regulate these things, it's really about, for them, understanding how we're doing it and making sure that we're, you know, dotting our I's and crossing our T's.
Jesse, are you going to brew and distill?
Yeah, so I'm going to be using the same equipment to make beer as we do to make distillate, although with distillate we'll obviously need a still. So you essentially make, I mean, you know, you make beer before you make any sort of distillate, other than, I guess, rum or tequila, where they don't, that it's not beer, it's not grain-based, but for most grain-based distillates. So yeah, I attended a course in Louisville, Kentucky, got some hands-on time with the still, and did a lot of sensory training around the various alcohol compounds that come off of the still at different vaporization points. Try not to get too geeky here, but it's a lot of the same off flavors that come through in bad fermentations in beer. So if you ever homebrewed and made a banana beer or an apple beer, which I did both of, those are my first two beers I ever brewed. Those are both compounds that are created by fermentation that, once you put in a barrel, an age, become complexity in barrel aged distillate, whether it be rum, whiskey, scotch, or whatever. So for me, it's just a very sort of exciting horizon of, you know, I've been brewing beer now for 5 years on a production scale, and I love it, and I love every aspect of actually making beer. And this is going to be, a chance to make a new product, but build on the foundation that I've sort of built. I could say build probably one more time, and with flavor, because it's all about flavor, right? It's all about bringing flavor to the table that you can share with people.
Do you guys know, like, what your first spirit is going to be on the market? Is that kind of, you're still figuring it out? Or, I mean, obviously some things take a lot of years, yeah, and you can't just...
For sure. You know, the one that I keep going back to for me, I mean, you know, you might look at it and say, okay, well, we've got the beer side and the spirit side, but, and I did come from more on the spirit side, but for me, it's really about the flavors and how we're going to bring it together and how we're going to talk to people about the spectrum of products. And flavor over form is the term I like to go back to. It's, you know, who cares what the ABV is? What are the flavors, mm-hmm. right? And so the one I come back to over and over again is rye, right? You take rye and you make a rye ale, and then you make a rye IPA, right? Now you've got a couple different flavors you're building on. You can distill that, right, and then make a rye white spirit mm-hmm. out of that. Would be, you could call it moonshine if you wanted. There's not really a definition around that. Or you could call it white dog or white whiskey. And then you put it in a barrel and you see where you go. You could put it in a 5-gallon barrel and after 6, 9 months, 18 months and see how it ages. You could put it in a real big barrel and see how it goes after 4 years. And I think that those different flavors would be interesting to bring to the public and talk about, you know, where do all those flavors come from?
Since you guys are going to have both the brewery and the distillery, are you going to try and be, I don't want to say duplicating, but really tying the two together, like having a rye beer and a rye whiskey?
And then gin is another product right. that is, you know, it's a botanical load. It's a white distillate that is defined by what the botanical load, sort of like hop additions. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hopped gins out there now, too. So it's another opportunity for us to play with flavors that would intermingle between beer and spirits.
You know, a lot of breweries are starting to distill. Like we hung out with New Holland not too long ago. We had a show with them.
Ballast Point.
Is that the end of brewing? I mean, is it a bad thing that brewers are going to end up? Because I know in Scotland, and I'll be the devil's advocate, but
not at all.
In Scotland forever, it was like they only, it seemed like many brewers only brewed so that they could, you know, provide product for the whiskey companies. And I mean, I'm telling you seriously, though, because it's like, you know, brewing is it's one hand, it's the end product, and we want to have great brews. But you're serving two masters if you're going to be a brewery and distillery.
Well, is it
that's
about,
a tough question. Look at that.
I think in the end of the day, they serve different purposes, right, to a certain extent. You know, the times that you drink them, or even the people who are drawn to them, sometimes they're different. Or you're drawn to them at different times of day. I think that if we bring the flavors, you know,
beer
in the morning
lunch.
Versus at lunch and that kind of thing. But I think that... I think that you can do both and show off the flavor profiles in all its forms.
And then for sense of place, you guys are actually going to be out right out here in Bushwick, aren't you?
We are.
Can you walk to your brewery from Roberta's?
Yeah, it's a 15-minute walk.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Talk about beer tours. You can come out to Bushwick. You can go to Hop and Hawks. You can go to Pine Box Rock Shop.
Yeah.
You can go to soon Interbar. But you don't know when you're opening, do you?
No. In 2016, 100%. I'll stand behind that.
Well, also, too, what's cool about that is, you know, as much as we love food and beer pairings, I love whiskey and beer pairings. I mean, I have a mile-long list of amazing whiskey styles that go beautifully with, you know, with beer.
Right.
And I think, obviously, we're talking about sessionability. Everyone uses that term. You can't really have a sessionable whiskey. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess you could, depending on who you are.
May I have another glass of your Del Borgo? I love Italian craft beer. Okay, everyone gets a chance to ask a question, because... This is different for us. We've never interviewed people so far out from opening their brewery, because you could be many months away. So Hutch and then Ann, ask these guys a question about their brewery.
Are you guys going to use the same brand name for both the distillates and the beers?
Yeah. So Interboro is going to be over the, you know, it's the overarching brand, and we're going to do our best based on what we were saying in terms of trying to tie flavor and education into all this. It's going to be Interboro. Brands will be by flavor, essentially. I mean, individual flavors.
I can kind of see the gift pack now. You know, you can come Christmas time, $250, nice basket, a bunch of stuff.
Some whiskey, some growlers, some cans.
Yeah, well, okay, so let me think. What I guess, ratio do you want serving your neighborhood and serving the community as sort of a bar or a tasting room, which you're going to have that, no? Okay, I guess I should have asked that.
Yeah.
Versus getting out into other bars and other places outside, you know, in New York City. And, you know, is it going to be more bar first, pub, brew pub first? And then if you have extra kegs, you can kind of give them out to people? Or is it meant for distribution?
And we see ourselves as a production brewery. I think the benefit of being in New York City will allow us to have the presence in the neighborhood and serve the community and have people be able to come in and see what we're doing. That was one of the benefits of being able to open here in New York. I think having people come and see what we are up to and be able to taste on site is a really great thing, but it's really the production that we're aiming towards.
Can we ask Hutch questions, too?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Is there an ingredient that you've always wanted to use or are thinking about, you know, using that you've never, ever used in a beer, but you really want to experiment and get in there and see how it goes?
Good question.
That is a good question. No. I mean, there's so many that I've never used. You know, as a brewpub guy, mostly in my background, I did a lot of different stuff, but was never, like, crazy experimental. I mean, we were up in that Grew Garden. I mean, there's so many things the other day that...
I know. I was even like, oh, what if we...
I've never used rosemary in beer. I've used lavender. I probably won't do that again. I would not recommend
it. I've been down that road.
Yeah.
Like, the white afro nails
lesson,
it, right?
The lesson learned is that little lavender goes a really long way.
Long way.
Yeah, I didn't mean to make a lavender beer.
But so now with your new program, you're going to be picking, what, different ingredients from gardens and...
Yeah, I mean, we're going to try and grow things. A lot of stuff. We have access to a lot. I mean, in the Hudson Valley, there's so many farms. There's so much stuff right at our fingertips. You know what? There's probably some really cool stuff I don't even know about, Ann. Like, that's what I'm going to use. It's something I've never heard of, and I don't know.
Same question for Jesse.
What am I going to use that I've never used before? Or is there a dream ingredient? I'm really stuck on tamarind right now, and the flavor of tamarind, sort of subtle and slightly tart. It's very mildly sweet, and I'm really interested in playing with flavors that are typically contributed by hops that could be woven into recipes I played with a ton of really crazy flavors, and for me it's all about keeping the perceptibility of the flavors at just past perceptible for me or for whatever sort of base tasting group I'm working with. I really don't like it when flavors that are odd or are like in your face. I like to really make things taste like beer and then have subtle back notes.
Keep it all balanced.
The Panzanella beer.
I mean, you know, I could go through a list a mile long, you know what I mean, of beers that Augie and I made that...
You guys, I would say you definitely push the limits, but I had a passionate discussion once with a chef, and we talked about your Panzanella beer from Carton, and I was like, yeah, it had like, you know, the vegetable qualities and some tomato-y thing, and then he's like, no, but dude, if it's a Panzanella, it has to have tomatoes and cucumbers and bread.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I guess the beer is the bread.
But. Well,
it's the concept. It's the idea. I just had a great beer brewed with tomatoes at Italy's New Rooftop, their sort of pop-up Baita, and it was a wit with tomato and I forget what the other ingredients were, but it worked. The acidity worked. You know?
No, it's great.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's good. It creates a lot of conversations. Wow, this is a really great show. You know, Hutch, congratulations. If you can go up there, to go up to Culinary Institute of America, check out the Brooklyn Brewery-sponsored brewery with Hutch. And for you guys, you're going to be back because I know when you open sometime in 2016, okay, we'll have you on and we can also taste some of your beers. And anything going on for you coming up? Any media appearances or things people should know about?
Probably. Well, now I'm working on a website and a bunch of... maybe within the next 2 weeks, I can talk a little bit more about it.
That's awesome. And it's great having you on. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Hutch, Jesse, Laura, and someone else, Ann, for being here on the Heritage Radio Network. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Justin and Maggie and Jack Kinsley. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.